You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. With setbacks in the economy and a move toward two working parents per household, money's tight for a lot of people, which means, however embarrassing, grown-up kids are looking to their parents for financial help for everything from rent money to medical bills.
The question for parents is when to throw their grown-up children a lifeline and when to say no.
Linda Herman's with us now. She's a psychotherapist and the author of Parents to the End, How Baby Boomers Can Parent for Peace of Mind, Foster Responsibility in Their Adult Children, and Keep Their Hard-Earned Money. Linda, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're living in a tough economy right now for a lot of people, and grown children are increasingly going to their parents for help, a lot of it financial. How widespread is this?
It's very widespread. I believe the number of young people, for example, living at home between 18 and 26 is at an all-time high. And so people are not just being reluctant to leave the nest. Some of them can't financially. So it's really a game changer. It isn't just a matter of people being immature.
And I assume that when family and money are both in the same conversation, there's going to be conflict. What kind of conflicts do you see arising?
Well, I see multiple kinds of conflict in my office. For example, how much do the parents expect of their young adult? He's going to come back home, if it's a guy, wanting to be treated like an adult and not have a curfew. Some parents of younger adults really expect them to honor curfews, especially if the parent has to get up, say, at 4 in the morning to go to work. We have the Boeing plant out here, and lots of people are leaving the house at 4 a.m. They don't want their young adult coming in at 2 or 3 and waking them up. So it's simple things like that. Also, how much to contribute to housework, whether or not there's an exchange of money. It can go on and on.
Well, I suppose there's a lot of different emotional things going into the brew there. You know, the children might be embarrassed or ashamed to have to ask for money. And the parents might be, you know, shocked that their kids are back in the nest again and a little reluctant. And maybe the kids feel entitled sometimes, too. I mean, how do you see that the different range of emotions playing out?
Well, that's a great point. The baby boomers, of which I'm one, definitely raised their kids differently than the prior generation, partly because baby boomers had more to give, and so they did. And our parents had a natural block built in that was just lack of money. And the thinking was different at that time, too. Expectation of being grown up was at a younger age, and so it wasn't in the psyche for parents to be thinking about long-term help of their kids. And it wasn't in the parent's psyche to worry about their child being happy. So we take those factors plus more income available, and we've got a generation of kids whose parents really wanted them to be comfortable and didn't want them to tolerate frustration and unhappiness. So actually, some of the folks, young folks, are less able to tolerate those uncomfortable situations and thus have greater expectations of the parents. And parents really get caught on, and that question comes to my office many times of, okay, when do we stop? And it's not just at age 23 and a half, you cut it off. But it stirs a lot of emotions, including guilt and anxiety in the parents.
Do you think there are things parents should be doing differently that many parents aren't doing now to prepare their children as they grow into adulthood to start to be more independent and not raise these conflicts?
Well, I do. For example, parents are much more involved, from what I'm hearing, with things like test preparation and kids' performance in their college classes. Parents need to examine when it's appropriate to keep in their helping and when it's appropriate to back off a little bit. Several things that I'll think about are, like, if parents have expectations of their young adult, that's something that's going to be helpful. In other words, don't let them just slide with no responsibilities at home. And so this can go into the preteen years and teen years. And if the child can contribute in some ways, that he do so to the family. And perhaps he does some contributions for no money because you're just part of the family. So having expectations. And another thing is to hold your child accountable at younger ages. The difference between empowering and enabling, as I see it, is the stereotypical definition of enabling is doing something that he or she can do for himself. And when we empower somebody, we do hold them accountable. No one feels empowered if everything is easy for them. And in fact, that deters motivation. And research, and that's some of the things I researched in my book, like how do you create drive? And of course, there's individual differences, but we empower people by having expectations, by holding them accountable, by letting them experience natural consequences. Say the college kid comes home and he says, oh my God, I spent 2 months worth of spending money and won, and there's this dance, or there's this game, and there's this concert. Well, the enabling parent would say, oh honey, I know that's got to be rough. Here's an extra $100. Go do this. Go have your fun. And the empowering parent might say, gee, I'm so sorry that, and I'm putting the emphasis on, you made the choice to spend your money that way. We can talk about what things you're going to cut back on in the coming month until you get some money again.
What if the grown child, you know, is doing, you know, a good faith effort to get a job? The jobs just aren't there, perhaps, in that market, or maybe they're having an unlucky streak. You know, do parents have to make some really tough choices when it's not so much a matter of a kid who's not really taking responsibility, a young adult who doesn't want to balance their checkbook, but really it's just a function of the way our society is working right now with the economy being rough?
Well, I think most parents, and I'm with this too, if we have the capability to help our kids and we see that they're making the good faith effort, then by all means, we may do that. And people have differing amount of resources. So some parents may have the child stay at home and say, hey, we can provide room and board. We can't give you money. We can provide you a place to stay till you get on your feet. We can pay this or that medical bill. I mean, it's certainly not a matter of cutting people off so that they're hurting. The goal is to see somebody become an independent, functioning adult. And how we go about it is going to look different for different families. But it's not to, like, catch this kid and make him suffer. That's not what it's about. And if somebody has that attitude, then there's other things going on there. Sure, we want to help them if we know they truly need it and we see the efforts being made.
Well, I want to talk in this interview some about the how this can work. Suppose parents have reached a decision. It's time to stop letting them live here. It's time to stop paying for blank. How do you start that conversation so it's not a punishing conversation and that it doesn't turn into a huge conflict?
Okay, that's another good question. Well, there's a couple ways to do it. I tell parents to be very positive with their son or daughter, because you're right, you don't want it to be a feel like some kind of a punishment. But it may be that, you know, something like, you know, we've seen the tremendous growth you're doing, and our goal and yours is the same. We want you to be happy and healthy and successful. We feel like what we've been doing has been helpful to a point, but now we think it's time for you to take that next step and, you know, perhaps be out of the house. And I know money's going to be tight for you, and maybe someone doesn't have a great job, but it's a part-time job. And this is what we're willing to do. So the parent may offer what they're willing to do, which might be, hey, we'll front you some money to get into an apartment, or we'll pay a certain amount, and then we'll gradually decrease it over the next 3 months, and then the fourth month, you're on your own. I mean, it can be done gently like that.
It sounds like giving a warning is a good thing, too. You don't just want to drop the bomb, hey, you're out of here, kid. You want to give them some warning and let them plan. Right.
Yeah, and some people will do that. Another thing is to sit the young person down, especially if it hasn't been working, and the parents are, and that's when they show up in my office. Oh, and there'll be a couple tension between the two parents, because one is usually like, oh, you know, I can't make my son go, and the other is like, he's been here for years, he's got to go. So they may have a discussion, and I will tell them sometimes, hey, bring your son or daughter in. But something like, you know, we've been doing this, and it doesn't feel like it's really working for any of us anymore. And they might just honestly say, you know, we're noticing we're getting frustrated. You don't seem happy with the situation. Let's talk about it. But again, framing it in a positive way, because it is a big step when people go out and seek out some independence.
In the families that you've worked with, what has been maybe the biggest failure in trying to do this? What is a common error that people might make?
A common error is the thought in families where somebody has consistently dropped the ball, that and I'm talking about the young person, that if the mom just says it the right way, or if we just talk about it some more, that's going to change things. Because mothers especially, and I'm one, we talk too much. You know, we want everyone to be happy. We want to say what we think and then expect people to be happy with what we're saying. And in these situations where parents do have to get a little tougher and do some nudging, or some cases like, you know, really pushing somebody out of the nest, talking isn't going to help. And if young people know that oh yeah, that's mom, she says that, she doesn't mean it, and there is no follow through, then the young person has the parents over a barrel, because people know when someone means it or they don't, and these deadlines approach, and then, oh, you know, well, I have some job applications out. Or, but if parents haven't seen the effort, just talking about it more isn't going to spark the effort.
We're talking to psychotherapist Linda Herman about how long parents should keep footing the bill or providing other help for their adult children. Her book is Parents to the End.
And we'd love to get your take. Are you helping to support your adult children? Do you think they're asking for too much, or do you put it down to the result of a bad economy? And how do you decide how much you want to help out? Tell us your stories at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're back now with Linda Herman. She's the author of Parents to the End. In that book, she tackles the sticky questions of how much financial and emotional help baby boomers should offer their adult children.
And we're taking your calls now. How do you decide how much to help your grown kids when it comes to money? And do you resent being asked for help, or are we looking maybe at a bigger problem based on a sagging economy? And how do you navigate these new waters that we seem to be in? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And if you're on the other end of this, having asked your parents for some help, how did it go? You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll go to our first caller now. We've got Ellen on the line from Milwaukee. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I just wanted to say I have four children. One is still in college, and three are out. And the two in the middle are still getting out from home. But I feel like they want nothing more than to be independent. And it's a little, I don't know what the word is. I feel bad for them. The cost of living for them today, when we were their age, the first job my husband got was around $20,000 a year. And that's almost what they're able to find, between 20 and 30, maybe a little over 30. But the rent and cars and everything else that goes with life is so much more than it was. They cannot make it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Ellen. I appreciate that. And what do you think, Linda?
Well, I think she's absolutely correct. It is pretty outrageous. And so we hate to have people lower their expectations of life, because that seems really just tragic. But the bottom line is that right now, the truth is that young people are coming out of college, and they are often getting jobs at Starbucks. I just saw a piece in the paper recently that said that people coming out with two-year technical degrees are making more money than four-year college graduates with liberal arts degrees. And that certainly wasn't a thing 30 years ago. So I feel for her, and I know that it is very hard. And the thing I believe, and she probably is doing this correctly, is encouraging her kids and encouraging them to live pretty modestly, too. I mean, being able to get out of college, buy a home, do things that some folks could do, you know, many years ago. That's just not happening right now.
Well, one thing that baby boomers in particular are thinking of now is retirement, and how are they going to pay for their own lives post-work? Are you seeing a conflict there between looking ahead to my future and trying to juggle supporting my kids at the same time?
I am seeing a conflict, and I'm seeing people work longer because they feel that they have to. I'm seeing some are afraid to tell their adult children how much they have, because to a young person, and especially maybe somebody who's been on the has an entitlement attitude, some of them will actually see that as their money, and they will think, Mom and Dad, you have so much money. They have no clue what it's going to cost for their parents, who may expect to live another 30 years. And so it can cause a lot of friction. I've known people who've changed their wills and maybe given each child a small lump sum and then said, we're not going to give you anything in retirement, and because they anticipated so much fighting or in the will, we're going to give it away. Here's some money now. You know, basically get your own life together.
It's interesting. Yeah. And I suppose there might be even a bigger crunch around the corner. We're seeing statistics about how lifespans are growing, and you need that money, I guess, to stretch even longer than it might have 10, 20 years ago.
Well, one solution that people are finding is this multi-generational living and people coming back to that. I mean, that was so common in the days around the Depression, after the Depression. And most of my family members had an elder family member living with them or caring for them. When I was growing up, it was real common. And Grandma didn't go into a nursing home. She just lived with one of the kids. And so now I'm seeing some baby boomers buy homes with their kids. I'm seeing some move into their children's homes, and I'm seeing some kids just move in with the parents, or they're buying, as I said, you know, buying homes together. And that is one solution. Of course, in some cultures, that's always been the case. The family has been the social security network, and it's not unusual, but you're starting to see it more now in the mainstream in the U.S.
We'll go back to the phones now. We have Dennis with us in Watertown. Hi, Dennis.
Hello.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
What's your story, Dennis?
My story is my daughter that lived at home since forever, and she's 37. And I just wonder, I'm debating whether to just tell her to get out, you know, find a place to be on her own, or, you know, let her stay here. But I'm afraid she is not learning anything by staying at home all the time.
Does she work?
She works, but she don't have a job where she makes enough she could live by herself. She'd have to live with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Does she pay anything towards the household expenses?
She just started paying very, you know, like $20 a week. That's
well,
it.
I think that is a good start, and that you're on the right track. Some people really need that extra nudging, and she may have to get less comfortable at home in order to start seeing living out of the home as a better option. I look at people's maturity levels too. Are they actively engaged with their friends? You know, does she want to be out doing things? Is she somebody who prefers to be home and just, you know, kind of curled up with a cat or watching TV?
Linda, are you suggesting when you say she needs to be less comfortable at home that Dennis should maybe do things that make it less comfortable? I don't know, run his favorite folk songs or country music tracks over and over again if she doesn't like that kind of music, or try to, you know, I don't know if you could do a curfew on a 37-year-old, but are there things parents can do that are subtle that might make home less palatable?
Sure. I don't know whether his daughter, for example, does much in terms of housework. Maybe some expectation to be set that, you know, we really need you to start doing more so that you're prepared for living on your own, and start talking the talk that this is the goal, putting that out there and increasing the expectations at home. But if it's too comfortable, some people just won't leave because it's easier, you know, it's more secure. That's why I've been asked too, like, is this somebody who socially, you know, has a pretty decent social life, has peers. I mean, that would be an encouraging sign that maybe she could, you know, gradually, she would have some of those relationships develop. Maybe she can have a roommate or something. But yes, parents have to find ways to make it a little less comfortable for some of their kids to go.
Thanks for the call, Dennis, and good luck. We have Joe with us now in Green Bay. Hi there, Joe.
Hi, how are you all?
Good, good. Do you have a question?
I do. I'm calling as a parent, actually as a couple, and I listen to this program. It's utterly fascinating because it really resonates for us in that I wanted to ask Linda's advice on, particularly for parents who are, you know, retired or semi-retired, and they have kids who are in mid-career, they're in their 30s or even their 40s, and because of the recession, which has been so devastating, this particular son had been working in one of the big banks, and they totally laid off all thousands of people.
Wow.
And so, of course, he's had great difficulty in trying to get back into the employment track. And we were trying to be helpful, but our big problem is we were not on the same wavelength. We thought we are now. But after all the negative and making it uncomfortable for him and all that stuff, I finally just thought this is just an awful way to live. But I really wonder what you can do with an older child who's in an empty nester. They come back, and you really want them to have their own life, their own friends. And it's so difficult because they then become unemployable. You know, they're off the career track, and it's just a really, really – and I see this with a lot of friends, you know, who face the same dilemma. And I was curious if Ms. Herman had any experience with this kind of thing.
Gotcha. Thanks, Joe. Linda, what do you think for people in this situation?
Well, sometimes the young person is depressed, and as he said, maybe they're not all that young either. They're in their, you know, mid-30s or into their 40s, and they come back, and it's as if the American dream has somehow just been pulled away from them, and they'll feel like, oh, hey, I did all the right things. I worked my butt off, had a great job, and they really will feel very disillusioned with the whole system. And so some of them do go home, and there is that danger, that, and parents walk a fine line between, this gentleman was saying, you know, do you just make it real difficult for them, or, you know, how are you being helpful? But if someone is depressed, you might recommend or suggest counseling. Maybe they would, refuse that. A lot of times parents come to see me. That's how it starts. The parent comes in, and then often I tell them, you know, how about bringing your son or daughter with you? And they'll sometimes they do come. And I try to frame it as positive as possible, because people already who are out of work and just lost, they feel bad enough. They don't need somebody making them feel worse. So, and I also tell parents, take ownership of the problem, and you can say, I'm not sure how I can be helpful, or I don't like the friction that we've been having in the house, and I want to do better. And that's all true. You know, please come with me. And so that's one of the avenues. But trying to be encouraging, maybe getting them to, you know, counseling. And some people then, if there's resistance, then the parents have to, you know, up it a notch. I knew one family where the son would not leave to go look for work, and wouldn't even leave the house. And so, and the parents would come home, and he's just rolling out of bed about 4 p.m. And so I actually said, make him leave the house when you leave the house.
All right.
He can come back, and he could sit in the library. There was a library not too far away, but some people end up, you know, going to those drastic means. I think
we're going to have to leave it there, Linda, but there's obviously a lot of sea change going on here, lots of people navigating new waters. Thank you so much for helping us through them today.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'd love to come back on again. It's a topic I enjoy talking about, and it seems like people are struggling.
Yeah, it was great to have you. Thank you so much, Linda. Psychotherapist and author of Parents to the End.
Coming up, our guest says it's time to bring native bees back to Wisconsin. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.